This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's a wholly protected landscape Enviro Show. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dio, and I'm not in the studio with...
And this is Glenn Ayers.
And some good news from our friends at Kestrel Trust. 2,000 plus acres of forest in the West Quabbin region are now permanently conserved. The land will be stewarded as forever wild, taking a passive management approach to the forest to encourage old growth conditions to develop. So presumably that means no destructive logging. Kristen DeBoer, Executive Director of Kestrel Land Trust, joins us for the details. So that takes us to our conversation with Kristen, Glenn.
This interview with Kristen, who I'm going to say she's one of my heroes in this area, yep. Land protection in the Connecticut River Valley area. She has been doing this for a long time, and she is really pretty modest a person, and I kind of like her because she's not bragging at all, but she's constantly working to protect more and more land. And hopefully if we can get the state legislature to cough up a few hundred million dollars for real land protection, real forest protection, permanent protection through forever wild conservation restrictions or fee acquisition, I think Kristen would be all over that, and we'll talk about that in the interview, and then we'll pick it up again on the other side. Today on the Enviro Show, we are joined once again by Kristen DeBoer from Kestrel Land Trust, and I'm going to say that Kestrel is my favorite local land trust, but there's also a connection with my very favorite land trust besides the Rattlesnake Gutter Trust, which I used to serve on years ago. But my favorite land trust, regional land trust, is the Northeast Wilderness Trust. But there's also a connection between Kristen and the Northeast Wilderness Trust because you serve on the board there. But we want to talk to you specifically today about some land protection efforts that you've been engaged in recently, and especially one that was announced recently about a large acquisition in the Pelham area. It's a forever wild protection. So, Kristen, if you would do a better job of introducing yourself to our listeners, tell them a little bit about the Kestrel Trust, what you do, and then let's get into some of these recent projects that you've been working on, and then we'll get into all the different things that land trusts do, maybe.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate that you love Kestrel and Northeast Wilderness Trust, also my favorite land trust. So I've been working as the executive director for Kestrel Land Trust for over 20 years. And my journey to work with W.D. Coles to protect 11,000 acres of their land really actually began 25 years ago. So I've been at this for a while, but we've done, you know, we're a land trust that's a big tent generalist land trust. We're committed to conserving land for lots of different reasons: wildlands, woodlands, farmland, community lands for parks and trails. We've even done an affordable housing and conservation project pilot recently in East Hampton. So we like to be innovative, and we like to do projects across our region, both urban and rural. And forests are really a huge part of what we do, generally keeping forests as forests and farms as farms, but more specifically looking for opportunities to protect forever wildlands, which are quite rare in New England.
And can you just explain, the Kestrel Trust works in kind of a geographic region. Can you tell us a little bit about that area that you work in?
Yeah, so we were founded in 1970 just to serve Amherst. So for the first 10 or 20 years, we were really like the Amherst Land Trust, Volunteer Trust, working with the Town Conservation Commission. And that was well before my time. But then in the 90s, Kestrel expanded to the surrounding towns. So really the Amherst, greater Amherst area up to Leverett and down to South Hadley, Belchertown, Hadley. Sunderland, sort of the Ninetown area. And then in 2011, we merged with the Valley Land Fund and expanded to their service area, which is the whole Connecticut River Valley. We can't serve all towns equally, so we're pretty much focused on the heart of the central area of the valley. But the Amherst area, Northampton, Holyoke, those are the bigger towns that we serve, and the surrounding communities. So it's really within the Connecticut River watershed. I'm also on the executive committee of the Connecticut River Watershed Partnership, which is the four-state region, but thinking about how water connects communities is part of what we do, and really looking at the Connecticut River Valley through the lens of water is one way of seeing the landscape.
Kristen, I remember when I was on the Rattlesnake Gutter Trust, which is a very small all-volunteer land trust that just served the community of Leverett. But we did a number of projects with Kestrel Trust, projects that were a little complicated or a little too big, perhaps, or required special funding, especially foundation and grant funding. And Kestrel Trust worked with the Rattlesnake Gutter Trust. And I assume that you do that with other organizations in the area besides just the Rattlesnake Gutter Trust, which brings in the expertise that the Kestrel Trust has because you have a professional staff and a much greater capacity than an all-volunteer organization would have.
Yeah, that's fair to say. We did start out as a volunteer organization, and when I came on to Kestrel, I was actually a volunteer board member in 2001, and so we have grown from that smaller community-based volunteer land trust to a professionally staffed land trust. So we have 14 staff now. And really, we grew because we were filling a niche in the valley, which is that there were a lot of volunteer land trusts, but not a professional land trust really serving communities to do complex projects. And we see our role as really magnetizing the valley to bring as much public funding as possible to do projects, whether it's state, federal, town, private philanthropy, sort of the whole gamut of funding. And landowners are a huge part of that when they're willing to donate land or donate conservation restrictions, but that's not always the case. And so we definitely have helped smaller land trusts, have loved working with Rattlesnake, also Pascomic in East Hampton. Naugatuck Land Fund in Northampton merged with us as well. So, we did consolidate a little bit, but we still have the spirit of the volunteerism and grassroots spirit, as well as being professional about real estate transactions, which are pretty hard to do.
Yes, a few years ago, I can't tell you how many years ago, but we had you on the show with Cinda Jones when, and you both talked about the largest conservation restriction, perhaps in Massachusetts history, which was the Brushy Mountain Tract, which was mostly in Leverett, I think parts in Shutesbury. But that's been a number of years. And since then, you just referred to the fact that you've helped put conservation restrictions on over 11,000 acres of lands that were owned by the Jones, Coles Lumber.
So we've worked with them on 11,000 acres of conservation. That's taken different forms. So the first big project that we did was the Paul C. Jones Working Forest Conservation Restriction, and that is most of Brushy Mountain in Leverett. And I think you and I walked that land together a long time ago, as well as being on the radio show. But it's one of the biggest contiguous tracts of private forest land in the state, and the restriction is held by the Department of Fish and Game in Massachusetts. And so that was done with the Forest Legacy Program, which is a U.S. Forest Service program, in 2011. And then we did another project like that in Shutesbury, which is another 2,000 acres. Similarly, Fish and Game holds the CR, and we got Forest Legacy money for it. And both of those are working forests. Wild, woodlands that allow sustainable forestry but guarantee public access for hiking, hunting, and fishing. What's different about this last project is Coles was interested in selling land. They were getting lots of offers from developers, and so we were able to work with an intermediary to buy. The intermediary bought the 5,200 acres, and now 2,000 of those acres are going to be held jointly with Kestrel Land Trust and the trustees. And that's the big project we just are celebrating, was in the news today in the Gazette. Roughly 1,000 acres in Pelham, a big contiguous block of forest, and 1,000 acres in Belchertown. And we had been working in that area with many smaller landowners over the years. So the scale of this is 10 to 20 times bigger than what we normally are able to do with single landowners. So it's pretty amazing that it's all come together and close to my home, so it's dear to my heart and a place that I love. And one of our logos for Kestrel is conserve the value love. We are definitely guided by science and are part of the bigger visions of that Massachusetts has put together for climate resilience and all sorts of biodiversity plans, et cetera. But we also conserve land that people love, and it makes a big difference, when it's close to home.
And so that area, I think I read the in the newspaper that part of that area is now protected as a forever wild area. I don't know if that's the first project you've worked on that's forever wild, but maybe tell our listeners what that means
Yeah.
and, the significance of that in this region.
So, simply put, forever wild forest is where nature is allowed to take its course without human interference as much as possible. Sort of free will of the land, but also, practically speaking, that means no commercial logging. And I think there's room for both on the landscape. And we are inspired by the Wildlands Woodlands vision, which sets out a goal of protecting 70% of the land as forest, with 10% as forever wild or wildland. And so this contributes to that goal. It's increasingly shared by many conservation entities around the state, and the Commonwealth is now has a grant program for forest reserves or wildlands, which we have participated in, also in another project in Shutesbury around Dudleyville Forest. So it's not our first Forever Wild project, but it's definitely a high profile one, and doing it in collaboration with the trustees, as the largest and oldest land trust in the state, is also really significant and hopefully will lead to more wild forests to come.
Yeah, I remember reading about that first Forest Reserve grant that was, or the program that was awarded, I believe, about December of last year, I think.
To Kestrel,
And
yeah.
to Kestrel for the area that was in on Dudleyville Road in Shutesbury. And maybe you could just quickly explain a little bit about how that came about.
Well, it came about like many of our projects. It's about building a relationship with landowners who want to continue seeing their forest in forest, but don't necessarily want to keep owning it. And so patience is one thing landowners can offer, because it sometimes takes a while to figure out the right funding source. That family we've been talking to for a long time as well. So I think in the case of Dudleyville Forest, the nice add-on, which we didn't have anything to do with but preceded the acquisition, is that the town and the state removed the dam that was there, and so the river is also free flowing, and so there's an opportunity to think about how the land will recover with the free flowing river as well as a wild forest. And I mean, being in the valley with the five colleges, there's also some opportunities for long-term research on forever wild forests as a baseline. That's in addition to the intrinsic value of nature, the idea of having just a place where we're not interfering but can be a baseline for how forests thrive is also something we hope to be able to collaborate with UMass and other research institutions in the valley over time.
So, Kristen, Dio here. This is exciting. It's truly exciting. But I'm wondering now that federal funding has gone south in so many ways, does that affect your work in any way?
Yeah, it's definitely lost opportunities. We had lined up another big series of projects, about 10,000 acres, and had applied for Forest Legacy funding. That's on hold. And then we were working with Mass Audubon, who had another $25 million rescinded. So, big money, big opportunities on hold from a federal point of view. But I do think land trusts are really resilient. We always have a plan B or a plan C or even a plan D. And so we're just forging ahead with plan B as much as possible.
When they announced the environmental bond bill, which is kind of overdue at this point, it should have been done in 2022, I think. But when they announced that, we started advocating for $250 million for forest protection and specifically for forever wild forests, because our feeling has been that the state has spent hundreds of millions of dollars protecting working forests. And I'm not opposed to that, but I wanted to level the playing field. And I think from my time on the Rattlesnake Gutter Trust, my attitude was always, if you really want to protect land, then you should buy it. You know, that's what I always said. But the problem is that there's not a sufficient amount of money available for all of the land that should be protected to be protected. And unless the property owner is exceedingly wealthy, they can't just give it away. And so we advocated for $250 million. I don't know what the final number will be that comes out of the environmental bond bill, but I'm hoping it'll be a significant amount of money that will be dedicated specifically for that forest reserves program. Because I know that, well, I know you, and I know, you know, your interest in protecting wildlands in your work with the Northeast Wilderness Trust and the Kestrel Trust. And I can imagine that you would love to have an unlimited supply of funding to do more projects.
Absolutely. Unlimited.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Every kind of project. But because there's been so little funding for forever wild forest protection, we really advocated that the administration cough up a big chunk of money. My feeling is they could do that for the next 20 years and just fund forever wild projects. And I would be okay with that. But anyway, I digress a little
well,
bit.
Well, that's optimistic.
That's
optimistic. But I do. Well, the one thing that we are supporting is, and many land trusts across the state are supporting it, as well as the statewide Mass Audubon and trustees, which is the Nature for Massachusetts ballot initiative. And that is an effort to allocate $100 million a year from existing sporting goods tax on golf courses and, you know, basketballs and running shoes, et cetera, that we already pay, but allocate it towards parks and trails and forests and farms. And so that would be a huge boost. I think Massachusetts has some really ambitious goals for forest conservation and has this, you know, signed on to the 30 by 30 initiative, but the funding does need to increase to make it happen.
Yeah, you can't do anything without money. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line, unless you have some extremely wealthy philanthropists who are going to donate their land or funds. But otherwise, we have to have some money in the bank in order to pay the staff and to do all of this work, because there is a tremendous amount involved in putting together one of these kinds of land deals, you know, including all the baseline data that has to be collected. All of that stuff has to be documented. It requires a lot of field work. It is a very intense job that's done in order to create even a conservation restriction. But to go further than that and permanently protect land, it takes a lot of effort. And, you know, I just want to let you know how much I appreciate the work that you do. And I have for years really appreciated your, you know, dedication to this. It's,
thank you.
I don't know how long really you've been doing this, a long time. But, you know, that's that kind of persistence and dedication is really admirable. So I want to thank you for that. And if you could maybe mention you work.
It's my dream job.
It is a dream job for sure. And you're leaving a legacy. I mean, I know you're probably not going to retire next year, but you already have created quite a legacy. So I just wanted to ask you briefly a little bit about the Northeast Wilderness Trust. We've had those folks on the show many times in the past, but you also work with them through their wildlands program that they have as well, right?
Yeah. Well, it does take a small village to conserve land. And I just, before I get to Northeast Wilderness Trust, I just want to emphasize that, you know, even though these numbers that we're throwing around are in the millions, the reality is that every person who cares about land conservation in the Valley and in Massachusetts or New England wide can be a member of their own land trust. And that makes a huge difference in priming the pump and being able to pay the staff to attract the big money and do the big work. So it's all woven together, and really every level of donation matters. So Northeast Wilderness Trust has also been on this amazing trajectory of growth over the last 15 years. And they just actually passed the mark of protecting 100,000 acres of forever wild around the Northeast. And so it's really been a privilege to be on that board. John Leibowitz and his staff has been amazing in how many complex projects they put together throughout Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut. We're still looking for a big project for them in Western Mass and hope to find one at some point.
I'm working on one.
Oh, good.
Hopefully they'll be involved in it. But as we kind of get to the end of this interview, I want to make sure that you give our listeners a chance to, how do they find out more about Kestrel Trust? How do they join and become a member? How do they get on your newsletter? And I know you often do a lot of hikes and, you know, outdoor activities where you bring people out to see the lands that are protected. I specifically want to go to one up in Shutesbury on Ames Pond, and maybe you could just mention that area and how that was protected with Julian Janowitz. But, you know, how do folks get a hold of you, or how do they support the Kestrel Trust?
All right. Well, the easiest way is to go to our website, kestreltrust.org, and that's with two E's. But really, we want to be integrated into the towns and communities that we serve, which means that we're often doing programs in collaboration with towns and other land trusts, and also increasingly a number of important environmental justice and social justice groups around the valley. So we have partnerships with the Food Bank Farm. We have a Food Bank of Western Mass. We have partnerships with Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and Girls Inc. We do have a number of programs coming up. I'm just looking on our own website right now, a few that are online, a few that are out on the land. We have Mindful Movement in Nature. We've got a full moon hike that we do with Adventure East. And the property you mentioned called Brightwater Bog in Shutesbury, which was given to us by Julian Janowitz, is a really special place that has a new boardwalk through a bog that Julian had built, the landowner had built at one time, but we just revived it and restored it. So that's a beautiful place to visit any time of the year. So I encourage you to get out that way and, you know, go on the Robert Frost Trail. I didn't mention that this project that we just finished, the 2,000 acres, includes 3 miles of the Robert Frost Trail and 2 miles of the New England National Scenic Trail. So either one of those trails are also a great way to see the land that Kestrel is helping to protect.
And that property in Shutesbury, I remember Julian from, you know, when he was still with us. He lived in Shutesbury and very close to Lake Wyola. It's actually kind of part of the Lake Wyola complex there, Ames Pond, right, and a big wetland complex that's just pretty spectacular, really any time of the year, but especially, you know, when there's a lot of waterfowl coming into the area and, you know, all kinds of activity with all kinds of critters that love those wetland areas. And I don't know if that was a core area for biomap, core habitat area, but it seems like it should have been.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, one of those really amazing places. And, you know, not too many people knew about it. I mean, Julian would invite people up to see the area when he was still around. But the fact that it is now permanently protected and it was never highly developable, but it could have been chopped up into pieces. But the fact that you work to protect it is, you know, that's really pretty amazing, being right next to, you know, the Lake Wyola State Park and that area. Yeah. It was a great project. And I really appreciated the fact that you worked on that one and, or the Kestrel Trust worked on that one. And,
yeah,
and that was, I think his real desire was to figure out how to protect that land.
Yeah, and how to make it accessible to the public. So he actually donated, sold a conservation restriction in his lifetime, which Kestrel was involved with, to DCR, and then later bequeathed the land to us as he passed away. But I do want to shout out to our stewardship crew for working on that boardwalk, Chris Vellante and Stu Watson, who worked with our volunteer trail crew. So that's another way to get involved with Kestrel. If you like to get your hands dirty or use your muscle power to help conserve land, that's where to go, is to work with our trail crew. And we have lots of opportunities for volunteering, as well as becoming a member and getting out on trails to see the land people love.
Yeah, and that boardwalk is great for people with, like myself, with mobility issues.
Right. Yeah. Well, the other place to go then, if you're looking for a nice boardwalk, is the Conte Refuge Fort River Trail over behind the box stores on Route 9. There's just this beautiful oasis that we helped conserve a while ago in Hadley, and there's a 1 mile loop trail there that's on an accessible boardwalk.
Well, Kristen, I don't know how to say it more so than the land that we love is being protected by efforts of you and the Kestrel Trust and your staff. And to me, that is really the most important thing that we can do. The most important legacy we can leave behind is that we're actually leaving this world in better condition than when we first arrived here. And long-term protection, such as these Forever Wild projects, are really key to the future. I understand that the number of projects have been limited. I know the Northeast Wilderness Trust hasn't done a lot of projects in Massachusetts. One of the reasons is that we have a more complicated approval process here in Massachusetts than they have in other areas, like in Maine, for instance. I understand that you could get a conservation restriction approved in 6 weeks or so in Maine, whereas it would often take, a year and a half or 2 years in Massachusetts to go through the whole process. But maybe we'll get some more staff for the Division of Conservation Services so they can improve their turnaround time on those things. But that all depends, again, on funding, and it depends on people being involved in advocating for that. And so that's where getting involved with a local land trust, I'll just say from my personal experience, one of the most rewarding things that you can do, if you're able, and if you have any skills at all, are pretty much very useful to this effort, is to go out and enjoy being in nature and find something that you can offer to the land trust that you'll get a great sense of reward by seeing the land preserved, a trail built, whatever it is, building a shelter, lean-to, whatever, on a trail system like the Robert Frost Trail or the New England National Scenic Trail. All of those things are often done by volunteers and in conjunction with land trusts. And so I'd very strongly advocate folks to just get involved. My experience, land trusts are very welcoming. They rely on volunteers, really, to get a lot of work done. And it's very rewarding.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, thank you for that endorsement. And it's really a community effort. And we're happy to have more members, more volunteers, more engagement. And yeah, it takes a village. So let's do it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for all you do, Kristen.
Thank you both. It's nice to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. Take care.
Well, that's really excellent news from Kristen there. But you know what? When she was doing the numbers as far as the state climate policy and so forth, they only had 10% scheduled for Forever Wild. I think that was from the state, and I think that's really inadequate. What do you think?
Yeah, even the new kind of wildlands and woodlands, farm and forest study that was done a couple of years ago about wildlands in New England, even that says that 10% would be the absolute starting point, bare minimum. But really, we need at least 20%. And honestly, we need to try to do 30% by 2030, which is, you know, coming right up. So it's going to take a lot of money. And it's going to take a lot of pushing because there are a lot of interests opposed to protecting land, because protected land cannot be exploited, cannot be pillaged like the state is currently doing in the Quabbin Reservoir area and yes, on all of the wildlife management areas. It's just pillaging, and self-dealing is the way all of the state agencies operate. So it actually is nice to see that the Jones family, Coles Lumber, they're selling their land. And at first, like the Brushy Mountain Tract, that would have been a perfect area in Leverett and Shutesbury. That would have been a perfect area to put in a Forever Wild conservation restriction. But of course, that went to the Fish and Game, and Fish and Game is allowing the Jones family to continue to log off that mountain. But I think there's hope for looking toward the future when we really get serious about meeting our climate goals, climate targets, and decarbonization. And the only way we're going to do that is by protecting as much forest land as we have in Massachusetts, really. That's the only way we're going to meet that goal of net zero, so-called net zero. We're going to have to really protect it all. And this is a good start. I'm very pleased with this project. And I really hope the Kestrel Trust will do a lot more of this kind of work. And then I hope that some of the other local land trusts like Mount Grace and a few other land trusts who have been strongly opposed to permanent protection of forests, I hope they wise up.
Yeah.
Because they're out of step with reality. They're out of step with the population. And I would really like to see them get on board with the idea of permanent protection and stop opposing the legislation that we've been trying to get passed for the last three sessions to permanently protect all the state-owned lands in western Massachusetts and in the southeastern part, like Miles Standish State Forest down on the Pine Barrens. All of that needs to be permanently protected, and that would be a good start. That would get us past 10% if we did that, and we'd be getting on our way to doing 20% just with that one single effort. So let's do that. It's time to wake up these legislators who don't seem to know, they don't seem to understand. We're in a climate crisis. It's an emergency. And we really need to permanently protect all of our watershed lands. And we've been working on doing that in the North Adams area for the watershed out there. And we need to do that also entirely around the Quabbin, Ware River, and Wachusett watersheds.
Exactly. All right. I guess that's it for this show. Think of anything else?
Yeah, one more thing to remember.
What's that?
Listen to your mother.
All right. This is Dio saying adios.
Hey, and this is Glenn Ayers. And folks, get wild and protect nature.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.